Before we're gonna do a recap of what we've been up to now. We're starting with chapter 45. We'll start with a recap. We're gonna read one verse. We'll have a word of prayer, and then we're gonna go back and do a bit of a recap up to this point because this is wonderful, wonderful stuff, and I want to make sure the story is concise, but also it's everybody understands what's going on because it's a wonderful story. So we'll read chapter 45, verse 1, and then my word of prayer. Chapter 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, "Cause every man to go out from me." And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. Let's pray. Father, again, bless our time together. Bless your word, Father. What a wonderful chance we have to preach and teach and learn about your word. Bless us now in all the activities of this day, Father. Give us safety as we travel back and forth. Father, bless our service. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen. So, again, talking about Jacob and Joseph and the wonderful stories in the Bible about those two. But now we're up to the fact where Joseph has been sold. He's been, as a slave, he's been taken to Egypt. He's been taken in by the captain of the guard. He's been promoted. He's been thrown in jail. He's been interpreted to Pharaoh's dreams. He's gotten out of jail. And now he's actually second in command of all of Egypt. And the famine is approaching. He successfully interpreted, divinely interpreted the Pharaoh's dream that a famine is coming. In the Middle East, in these times, famines happened all the time. There was no process for irrigation or for farming. It was basically every person for themselves. And so you farmed and then you consumed. There was no storage. And so when the rain stopped and the famine came, people just died by the tens of thousands in some cases. So Pharaoh had a dream. Joseph interpreted correctly, saying, you're going to have 7 years of plenteousness and then 7 years of famine. And Joseph devised and provided to Pharaoh a plan of how to save the food for all those 7 years. So when the famine happened, we'll have food. We'll be ready for it. And Pharaoh was so impressed by his plan, he put Joseph in charge of it and made him the second most powerful person in all of Egypt. And so the plan works. For those 7 years, they gathered all the food they could. The famine hits, and Egypt is ready, but no one else in the area is. And so we found there's a famine in Canaan, and that forces Jacob to send his brother, his sons, who as the Bible described, were just looking at each other. They had no idea what to do. They were just kind of looking, what are you going to do? I don't know what you're going to do. He says, go to Egypt. There's food there. Go to Egypt and get the food. Have no idea that Joseph is there and that he's the second most powerful person in the country, but they will find out. Now, they send the sons out. Joseph is overjoyed to see his brothers when they arrive. Now, Benjamin didn't go. Jacob would not let Benjamin go. Youngest son, his favorite son, he didn't want to take a chance on losing him. So he wouldn't send Benjamin. So Benjamin stayed home, but the rest of the brothers went. Now, again, Joseph is overjoyed to see his brothers, but he hides his identity, and he speaks in native Egyptian language through an interpreter. He doesn't want them to know who he is. He does this for two reasons. One, he wants to test their character because it's been, remember, they sold him into slavery. They wanted to kill him. And he wants to test, see if they changed, if their character had changed without knowing who he is. And secondly, he wanted to determine the fate of Benjamin, his youngest brother. He was very fearful that they had done or would do to Benjamin what they did to him. And since Benjamin wasn't there, he was fearful they'd done something to Benjamin. And so that's why he was testing them. And so Joseph put Simeon in prison and sends the other brothers back to get Benjamin. You want me to release Simeon? Go bring your youngest brother back with me. Chapter 42, verse 20 says, "But bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die." And they did so. Now, when Joseph sends them back to get Benjamin, he sends them away with the corn they did purchase. But he also put in their sacks the money they paid for the corn with as a gift. And he gave them provisions for the trip home, which they normally didn't do. So even though he's testing his brothers, he's making sure they're going to be safe and okay and gives them these gifts as they return home. Now, eventually, the food runs out again. The brothers did not come back immediately to get Simeon. They did not because Jacob didn't want to lose Benjamin. So they didn't come back immediately. The Bible doesn't tell us how much time had elapsed, but it was enough time to run out of food. So you probably figure it was several months. And so the food has run out again. Now, after a heated discussion with Judah, Jacob finally agrees to send the brothers back with Benjamin to both get more food and to get their brother back. And he sends back presents of a little balm, little honey, spices, myrrh, nuts, and almonds. He's trying to entice this leader, who is Joseph, but they don't know that, to release Simeon and please don't hurt Benjamin. And they go back to Egypt. Now when they arrive, Joseph releases Simeon and hosts a feast for them. Has slays an animal, has a big feast. It's highly unusual for somebody of that high regard in the Egyptian society to throw a feast for foreigners. Remember, they said they wouldn't even eat together at the same table. They'd eat a separate table. So it's highly unusual to do that. And he sees his brothers and he weeps with joy. But he has to leave the room so he doesn't see them. They don't see him weeping. So he rushes out. He weeps with joy to seeing them, especially seeing Benjamin. He's alive and he's healthy, he's fine. He has to wash his face and clean himself back up. Comes back in. Now, he then sends all the brothers home with the food they bought, the money again that they paid for the food again, and food for the provisions. But he includes one more thing. He includes his own personal silver cup he puts in Benjamin's bag. Again, he's testing them. And so they leave, not knowing the silver cup is in Benjamin's bag. And they leave. They're not gone very long until Joseph says to his servants, "Go get them. They've stolen something from me." And so they catch up to them. They find them. And they didn't know the silver cup was there. And they all go back with the servants to answer for their quote-unquote crime. Now, after hearing his impassioned plea from his brothers about they didn't do this, and you can take us all slaves if you find who stole this cup, Joseph gets very emotional. Again, he orders all the Egyptians to leave the room, and then he finally reveals himself to his brothers. Chapter 45, verse 1. We heard it before. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, "Cause every man to go out from me," meaning all the Egyptians have to leave the room. "And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard." Even though they'd been sent out of the room, Joseph wept so loud at revealing himself to his brothers that they heard him from the side rooms. So the reunion is complete. The brothers, of course, are stunned. They've been dealing with this man, had no idea it was his brother that they'd sold. And so their reaction, verse 3. "And Joseph said to his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live?" And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. Imagine their reaction. Now, I'm sure no one in here has ever done anything bad to anybody. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure you have nothing bad to anybody. But imagine having treated somebody this badly for 17 years have gone by, and you see them again, and they're in a position of power where they could just off you in the position that he had. He could have him killed for this. And suddenly, and having dealt with him all this time, not knowing it was him, suddenly he reveals himself. You think you'd be stunned? Yeah, I think I'd be stunned too. And they were certainly stunned at what they were seeing. Now, they say in verse 4, "And Joseph said to his brethren, Come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." Now, Joseph does not say this with anger or with revenge in mind or to intimidate. He's simply revealing himself to his brothers. And then he forgives his brothers and reveals God's purpose for his being sold and a slave in the first place. Verse 5. "Now therefore, not be grieved, nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life." He's saying God did this to bring me to Egypt to develop his plan to save Egyptians, but also to save you from this famine. Wonderful acknowledgement of God's plan for his life. And sharing this with his brothers lets them off the hook, so to speak. Now, obviously, they didn't need to sell him to slavery, but that was all part of God's plan. They're still guilty of that. But he's letting them off the hook by saying this is all part of God's plan, so don't be mad with yourselves. Verse 7, "And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives with a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." So Joseph is giving credit where credit is due to God for developing the plan and implementing it. But it's another way of letting his brothers off the hook. Don't feel guilty. Yes, this was wrong, but God has a plan. Look how the plan has worked out. Now we have food for everyone and you are going to be blessed by it. So Joseph urgently tells his brothers to go back to Canaan and get his father, Jacob, and bring him back. And bring him back to Egypt. He promised them a home in Goshen, which was near him, where he will provide for them everything they need, their children, their flocks, their herds, and to prevent them falling into poverty during this great famine, verses 9 through 13. Haste ye, and go up to my father, and say unto him, thus saith thy son Joseph. When he hears that, he's going to be surprised. God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen. And thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast. And there will I nourish thee. And yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. So the famine is 2 years into its existence. And the brothers have had to come back twice to get food. So it gives you a bit of a time frame of how long the food lasted. At the beginning of the famine, when they ran out of their own food, they got some more food, and they had to go back the second time to get more food. So 2 years have gone by. And the famine is throughout the land, and they've been provided for by their brother, the second most powerful person in Egypt, who they didn't even know was alive. And now he's revealed himself, and he says, I love you. Go back and get our father. Bring him back. You can settle near me, and I'll provide for all your needs. Now, Joseph emphasized that he is indeed his brother speaking to them. They must have had some sort of confusion or doubt that it was actually Joseph. Remember, it had been 17 years. And Joseph was a young man, and now he's an adult, and he's robed in all the Egyptian wear, second most powerful man in Egypt. They must have had some doubt that it was him. And he pointed out to them that his eyes and the eyes of his younger brother Benjamin, who had not seen him before he was disguised, Benjamin had never seen him disguised. The brothers had. He'd been disguised and had his voice on. Benjamin had never seen him this way. He'd only seen him as Joseph years and years before. But he wants Benjamin to serve as an undeniable witness that the Egyptian ruler standing before them is truly their brother Joseph. In verse 12, and behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. So he wants to make it clear to them that I am indeed Joseph. Verse 13, and ye shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that ye have seen. And ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. Go get dad. And bring him here. Because he knew that they would not do well staying in Canaan with the famine. They couldn't get any more food there. It was difficult taking food there. Come here where the food is, and I will provide for all your needs. What a wonderful acknowledgement, and yet a forgiveness of the sin that they'd done to him. Their brothers and his dad. They're taking care. The dad never did anything to him. The dad thinks he's dead, and has for years. So go tell dad that I'm alive and bring him back with you. And so verses 14 and 15, they share the brothers finally realize it's Joseph, and they share a very emotional reunion. Chapter 45, verse 14, and he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them. And after that, his brethren talked with him. They finally acknowledge, they finally realize that this is Joseph. And then they realize he's forgiven them. And so they want to have a reunion. They weep and they hug. And imagine all 11 of them. That's a big reunion, right? Or 12 of them. Anybody has a really, really, really big family? How many?
It was seven.
Seven? And yours?
Nine.
She wins. Nine. I've been with her family. Yeah, there's nine of them, all right. And she's going back for the family reunion next month. And so imagine a family that large, when you see each other after a long time apart, there's a lot of hugging and kissing going on, maybe a little crying going on. I'm one of three brothers. Brothers don't cry, you know. We smell onions, and, you know, that's why we weep. We smell onions. But we do hug it out when we see each other. And so, but imagine they finally realize this is the brother they tried to kill and they sold into slavery, and he's forgiven them, and he's going to provide for their needs. And they tell him, go get our father and bring him back. The wonderful release that they must have felt was tremendous. And that's why they're weeping and crying and hugging it out, that Joseph has finally revealed himself and forgiven them. Now, Pharaoh does wonderful work here. The Bible doesn't tell us who was Pharaoh at this time. And all the research I've done, historians disagree on who was Pharaoh at this time. And it really doesn't matter as much because the Pharaoh really did them a good thing. Of course, he was certainly happy with Joseph because he'd interpreted his dream. and devised a plan to save them all from this great famine. So he was in Joseph's debt. But he does extraordinary things as an Egyptian pharaoh for a bunch of Canaanites. And so we see that the pharaoh hears that Joseph's family has arrived and encourages the move. He offers the very best of his lands to the people of Joseph. He provides them wagons for their women and children to travel on. He tells them not to bother to bring anything with them. I love the southern term, regard your stuff. That's a southern term. For he will provide for all their needs, starting in verse 16. And the fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph, brethren, are come. And it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, say unto thy brethren, this do ye, lade your beast, and go and get you into the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households, and come unto me. And I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat of the fat of the land. Now thou art commanded, this do ye, take your wagons out of the land of Egypt, for your little ones, and for your wives, and bring your father, and come. That term, thou art commanded from the Pharaoh. So this is not an option if they wanted to have an option. They don't have one. And so Pharaoh's ordering him to go get his family and bring him back. Verse 20. Also, regard not your stuff, for all the good of the land of Egypt is yours. So Joseph provides the wagons and provisions for his brothers to go get their father. He gives all his brothers new clothing. In ancient times, an Egyptian leader giving clothing to somebody was a sign of respect, favoritism, and, of course, a provision. But it was a significant sign, and he gives all of his brothers new clothing. He gives Benjamin, remember the feast they had? He gave Benjamin five times more food than everybody else. He gives Benjamin five sets of clothing and 300 pieces of silver. I looked it up. In this time, 300 pieces of silver was 15 years the wages of a shepherd. So he gave him basically 15 years of wages as a gift, 300 pieces of silver. Now he instructs him, see that you fall not out of the way. Advising him not to quarrel or argue about what they've done to him in the past. Forget it, it's all behind us. Just go get dad, bring all your stuff back with us. Verse 21. And the children of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons, according to the commandment of Pharaoh, and gave them provisions for the way. To all them he gave each man changes of raiment, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and five changes of raiment. And to his father he sent after this manner 10 asses laden with the good things of Egypt, and 10 she-asses laden with corn and bread and meat for his father by the way. He sent tons of food for dad to eat heartily on the way back. Verse 24. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them, see that you fall not out of the way. So he says, don't be distracted. Get you home, get dad, and everybody come back. Now, the brothers return to Canaan. And they tell Jacob, Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. Imagine Jacob's reaction. He had to be, first of all, he had to be doubt. Can't be true. He's been dead 17 years. What are you talking about? And then it must have been, well, you're telling me a story because you're trying to make me feel better. And the Bible says his heart fainted at the news because he didn't want to believe it. And yet he sees the wagons and the gifts, and his heart is revived. And he declares, Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die because he's very old. So imagine an old man like me, old man. Every time I see my daughters, I'm just thrilled. Every time we see our daughters, we hug them, we kiss them, we love our daughters. When it's been a long time since we've seen our daughters, it doesn't make it more, but it makes it very special. And so last year, Stephanie came from California, spent some time with us in the summer. We took like 10,000 pictures, of course, and had a wonderful time. And even when Shannon comes down from Richmond, anytime we see her, we love to see her, hug her. And then I told them this on Friday night, and I'll tell you now. Our son-in-law, Laszlo, we've been praying for him, praying about him. We've not asked him about his salvation because he's going through a difficult time. We've been saying, praying for him, we're praying for you, praying for him. He says, I appreciate it. Friday night, when he dropped off Zoe the dog, Friday afternoon, we said, we're praying for you. And he's going through a difficult time. And I says, you're on our church prayer bulletin. So we're not getting into your business, but, once, and he stopped and said, thank you, praying for it. He says, I got saved about 4 or 5 years ago. He said, I had to talk to a pastor for weeks to go through it, and finally he led me to the Lord. He says, I'm not in church, but I accepted Christ as my Savior. And we kind of went, yes! So that's a wonderful news from him. And so we're going to work on next, getting a job. And when you pray for a Christian to get a job, I think it certainly helps more. But I mean, God will provide even for non-Christians. But knowing he's accepted Christ has made us feel 1,000% better, 10,000% better. And now we can pray for him as a Christian to God, please give him a job. And so he's still applying, but he's now in California, and they're having the ceremony for his mother. It's a very, very difficult time for him. But our daughter has been wonderful at supporting him and being there for him. Although she did threaten his life Saturday. Friday. He came down to deliver the dog, and their flight was at 6:30 p.m. the same day. And he drove down an hour to drive off. He stayed with us for a little while. And then Shannon says, if he doesn't return in 10 minutes, I'm going to be a widow. Jokingly, of course. And then we said, he just left. And then he had to go get cat food and arrange for the cat sitters because she has cats and do a bunch of other stuff on the way home. And then she's texting about, I forget all the tests, but driving her crazy and whatever stuff. And they finally make it to the flight. And she said, despite all the stuff I told him to do, we made the flight anyway. And so she threatened him a couple of times, but in jest, of course. But she's extremely supportive of him. And so just hearing that he claimed Christ, we didn't ask. We were moving that way, but we didn't get there. He claimed Christ as his Savior. So that's wonderful news. So pray for him. Pray for both of them. But pray for him for work. But it's so much better when you hear that about somebody that they're saved. And so Joseph, his son was dead for 17 years. And now he hears he's alive, and he says, I want to go see him before I die, verse 25. And they went up out of Egypt, and he came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father, and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not. And who can blame him after what these boys had done over the years? Verse 27. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. And Israel said, that's Jacob's name, and Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. So a wonderful ending of chapter 45. Getting into chapter 46, Israel, or Jacob, journeys to Egypt with his family and all their stuff, their belongings, during the famine to go to Egypt. And at Beersheba, God speaks to Jacob in a vision, telling him not to fear going to Egypt, promising to make of him a great nation, and to go with him and eventually bring him up again, with Joseph being present at his death, which is what Jacob wanted. And so that chapter 46, verse 1, and Israel, Jacob, took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put thine hand upon thine eyes, which means he will be there when you go away, when you pass away. So that's a wonderful thing for Jacob to hear, because he wanted to die in the presence of his son Joseph, whom he thought was gone for all those years. So now, Jacob, all the sons, all the children, everything they have, traveled to Egypt using the wagons provided by the Pharaohs and, of course, Joseph. And they bring all their possessions into Canaan, verse 5. And Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob their father and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their cattle and their goods which they had gotten in the land of Canaan and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed brought he with him in Egypt. So having moved seven times, eight times in our life, as a member of the Air Force, you probably moved that many times. It's difficult picking up everything you have and moving, but these people had a big farm with lots of stuff going on. They packed it all up in these wagons that the Pharaoh, through Joseph, had provided to move everything in Egypt. Now, verses 8 through 25 list all the family members. We're not going to go through all these, but every wife, son, every child, everybody had. It totals 70 members of the household that they brought with them to go into Egypt, which is quite a lot. So verses, if you can read verses 8 through 25 on your own, you'll see every wife, every son, every child listed. And so verse 26 establishes the foundational claim or the clan of the Israelites. So when you combine Joseph and his two sons that he had in Egypt, and Jacob himself with the 66 listed in the verses here, it brings you a total of 70 people who settle in Egypt, where they eventually grow into a great nation. So verse 26 says, and all the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, beside Jacob's sons' wives, and all the sons were 66. That's 66. And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob, which came in Egypt, were 70, which is 70. So Jacob sends Judah ahead from this caravan, or from Egypt, down to meet Joseph. Jacob sends Judah from the caravan out to meet Joseph before they arrive in Goshen. So he wants to send Judah out to meet with his brother to say, hey, we're on the way. Verse 28. And he sent Judah before him unto Joseph to direct his face into Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. Now, Joseph comes to Goshen in his chariot. And the chariot here is historically important because, again, it points to who was in charge in Egypt at this time. Certain pharaohs, they didn't have chariots. Other pharaohs had chariots. And so it still points to basically an Egyptian pharaoh. Some of the pharaohs were actually, one of the pharaohs was actually from Canaan. And so the reason why they don't think he was a pharaoh at this time, but it makes sense though, a pharaoh from Canaan would certainly want to help fellow people from Canaan. But you heard about them shaving. And in Canaan, they didn't shave. And they didn't have chariots. So this was an Egyptian pharaoh, which makes it even more significant that he went to this extreme lengths for Canaanites. Again, because of his appreciation of what Joseph had done in interpreting his dreams and preparing for the famine and make sure they didn't all die from the famine. He's so happy with Joseph, he went to this extreme measures to bring his entire family, all 70 of them, back to live in Egypt and to provide for all their needs. So Jacob sends out Judah to meet with Joseph and bring him in. And so they come to Goshen in his chariot. And he has a very, very emotional reunion with his father. Imagine the reunion with Joseph and his father Jacob. Thought he was dead 17 years, 18 years. And now they meet up. Verse 29. And Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, to Goshen. And presented himself unto him. And he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. You can imagine the tears were flowing at the reunion. Verse 30. And Israel said unto Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive. Jacob says, I've done it all. And if you're alive, I'm now ready to die. And so a wonderful testament to his love for his son, who he thought was dead for all those years. Now, Joseph instructs his brothers to tell Pharaoh, hey, when Pharaoh asks who you are, tell him you're shepherds, assuring that they have a place in Goshen, a land separate from the Egyptians. They have their own land separate. Tell them you're shepherds, and you get your own land separate from the Egyptians. Also, he was concerned that Pharaoh may try to bring him into his army. There were 11 of them, and they were healthy young men, and they didn't want to be conscripted into Pharaoh's army. So he said, tell them you're shepherds, and that'll protect you. Verse 31, and Joseph said unto his brethren and unto his father's house, I will go up and show Pharaoh and say unto him, my brethren and my father's house, which from the land of Canaan, are come unto me. And the men are shepherds, for their trade hath been to feed cattle. And they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And it shall come to pass when Pharaoh shall call you and shall say, what is your occupation? That ye shall say, thy servant's trade hath been about cattle from our youth even until now, both we and also our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians. So they if they told them other than that, they would be mixing with the Egyptians. They didn't want that. They might be conscripted in their army. And, of course, they wanted to keep raising their cattle, which was their flocks. So tell them you're shepherds. You'll get separate lands all by yourself, which is exactly what happened. But again, as an example of Pharaoh going to extremes to take care of Joseph's family. And so a wonderful testimony there. We'll start chapter 47 Have a bit more time. Now, Joseph's family are all in Egypt now. They've all made it to Egypt. They've got their lands. They've got their flocks. And all of them are together again. And it's a wonderful time. Joseph has provided a means for them to survive the great famine that's still ongoing because they have food aplenty. And he presents five of his brothers and his father, Jacob, to Pharaoh. Meeting Pharaoh was a big deal, obviously. This is the leader of the land. He's an Egyptian leader. He didn't meet just anybody. You had to be presented to Pharaoh, and this is what Joseph is doing. And so we see in verse 1 of chapter 47. Then Joseph came and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brethren and their flocks and their herds and all that they have are come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen," which is exactly what he wanted them to do. Verse 2. And he took some of his brethren, even five men, and presented them unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto his brethren, "What is your occupation?" And they said unto him, "I said unto Pharaoh, thy servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers." Now, here's a test question. Why did he only bring five of his brothers? Anybody have an idea why he only brought five of his brothers? This bothered me until I looked it up. Because again, he was afraid if he presented all 11 of them, they would be conscripted into Pharaoh's army. They were healthy, vigorous men. And also, it was he didn't want to overwhelm them with all the people, with 11 brothers. It was kind of a modest entourage instead of bringing in everybody, looking like maybe you're bragging a little bit. It was a non-threatening, kind of a humble approach before Pharaoh. We didn't want to bring 11 folks, so we could feel intimidated by that. And it was sort of cultural in the Egyptian culture that five was a standard group size when you met with the Pharaoh. You didn't bring more than five. And of course, Joseph, having lived there all these years, knew that. So he only brought five of his brothers to ensure they didn't get conscripted, not to kind of intimidate the situation, and it was culturally acceptable to bring five people. And so they meet with Pharaoh. The brothers tell Pharaoh why they came to Egypt in verse 4. They said, "Moreover, unto Pharaoh, for to sojourn in the land are we come, for thy servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is sore in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, we pray thee, let thy servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Now as requested, Pharaoh allows his family to dwell in the best land they have, which is Goshen, because they are shepherds. Verse 5. And Pharaoh spake unto Joseph, saying, "Thy father and thy brethren are come unto thee. The land of Egypt is before thee. It is the best of the land. Make thy father and brethren to dwell. In the land of Goshen let them dwell. For if thou knowest any men of activity among them, then make them rulers over my cattle." So Pharaoh gives them this great land and says, "Go raise your flocks." And so they're protected from this conscription idea because there weren't that many of them showed up. They didn't offend Pharaoh by bringing too many people. Joseph knows how to play the game. And this is what he's done. Now, 130-year-old Jacob. Jacob is 130 years old at this point. He blesses Pharaoh upon their meeting and describes his life as a short, challenging pilgrimage compared to his ancestors. Verse 7. And Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and set him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. A Canaanite blessing an Egyptian Pharaoh. And an Egyptian Pharaoh allowing it to happen is a wonderful, wonderful event. Verse 8. And Pharaoh said unto Jacob, "How old art thou?" Don't ask those questions of men. You shouldn't ask those questions of women either. Don't ask me how old I am. But Pharaoh, being Pharaoh, could ask that question. He respected Jacob. He respected the fact that his son Joseph, he respected what he's done. So we just want to say, that was a way of Pharaoh saying, "I respect you. How old are you?" It's a sign of respect. So ask him how old he is. Verse 9. And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of my life of my fathers and the days of their pilgrimage." So Jacob said, "I'm old. I'm not as old as my fathers and my ancestors have been, but I've had my time. I'm 130 years old." Now, Jacob, verse 10, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. So a wonderful time of just a blessing between the leader of Egypt and basically the leader of the Canaanites. They're now living in their land. Now Joseph gives his family the best of the land and feeds them in verse 11. And Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, which was Goshen, and as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families. Now, There's a bit of a timeout here as far as with Jacob and Joseph, and in the few minutes we have left, it describes the situation in Egypt itself, what the Egyptians had to do to survive during the famine, because the food, of course, wasn't going to last forever. And this was, again, Joseph's economic management over his country, which is Egypt. This is who he's in charge of. And so verses 13 through 26 point this out. So money starts to run out. And so as the money runs out, the Egyptians trade in their livestock and their land and eventually their own freedom to Pharaoh in exchange for food, verses 13 through 17. And there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. This means that, yes, they'd stocked up all the food, but there's no more food growing out in the lands. So everything, if you wanted food, you had to come to Pharaoh and get food. And this is what they're talking about in verse 13. Verse 14, and Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the corn which they brought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence? For the money faileth. And Joseph said, give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fail. And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses and for the flocks and for the cattle of the herds and for the asses, and he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year. So why did Joseph exchange goods and services for the bread, for the food that he had? Undoubtedly, Pharaoh was telling him to do so because he just wanted to give this away. This was Pharaoh's way of getting something for all the food he was giving out. So all the food and money is exhausted in the land. They all come to Pharaoh. They come to Joseph, actually, and say, give us food. And Joseph comes up with a plan that pleases both the people, as we'll see, and Pharaoh for the exchange of goods. And so verses 18 through 20 describes more about this. We won't go into all of it. But verse 19 describes, wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land, by us and our land for bread? And we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate. So they're offering themselves as servants to Pharaoh. That's how desperate they are. Verse 20, and Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. That's a key term, for Pharaoh. He didn't do it on his own. For the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them, so the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof. He took them out of the fields, which were barren, brought them into cities where he could feed them and take care of them better. And so that was how the great cities were born. Now, the only one exempt from this were the priests of Pharaoh. They were exempted from this in verse 22. Only the land of the priests brought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned to them of Pharaoh, and did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them, wherefore they sold not their land. So they were exempt. And so Joseph establishes this new law for the Egyptian people following this famine. After purchasing their livestock and even their lives for Pharaoh in exchange for food, he promises them and provides them seed, requiring them to give 20% of their harvest to Pharaoh while keeping 80% of their own. Sounds like tax to me, but it worked. And we'll see the people here thought it worked. And so verse 25, the other verses describe how they're doing it. Verse 25 shows how the people reacted to this. And they said, thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. My Lord being Joseph, the leader, of course. So they thanked him for this. Now you can say, well, he took all they had. The only option was for them to die. Because if he didn't take the cattle, there was no way to feed the cattle. They would have died anyway. And what good was the land if nothing would grow on it? And when everything else ran out, they said, well, we'll be servants. Well, guess what they did to servants? They fed them. They took care of them. So this was their way of surviving this great famine. And the people thanked him for this. Verse 26. And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt until this day that Pharaoh should not have the fifth, that Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh. So that was a 20% tax. It worked. The people appreciated it, and it managed to save their lives. So now, another 17 years have gone by. Remember, Jacob is 130 when they get there. Now he's 147. So 17 years have gone by. And Jacob and his family had been blessed by God while in Egypt, and with their possessions and with their wealth growing exponentially. Verse 27. And Israel, Jacob, dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein, and grew and multiplied exceedingly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. So now Jacob, in the moments we have left, is approaching death. What a wonderful life this man has led. Now, remember, Jacob was a deceiver early in his life. He deceived his brother twice. He deceived his father. He was very afraid of Esau, and so because he stole his blessing. But he had that meeting with God, and since then, he lived a righteous life. And he's done wonderful things, and now he's at the end of his life. As death approaches, Jacob makes Joseph swear not to bury him in Egypt, but to bury him with his ancestors in Canaan, the land of promise. Verse 29. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die. And he called his son Joseph and said unto him, "For if now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh," which is how they made these agreements, "and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt, but I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place." And he said, "I will do as thou hast said." And he said, "Swear unto me." And he sware unto him. And Israel, Jacob, bowed himself to bed's head, and he passed away. So Jacob is no more. He's passed away. And he hadn't passed away. He's going to pass away in chapter 48. We won't get there today. But he's at his death's door. And the last thing he wants to do is bless, of course, his sons. So when we get to chapter 48 next time, we will talk about that Jacob is frail. He's almost blind. He can't tell his sons and grandsons apart. And he wants to bless Joseph. He wants to bless Joseph's two sons that he had in Egypt. And there's a very interesting story of how he does that. He mixes them up. He didn't mix them up accidentally. He mixed them up on purpose, where the youngest gets the blessing instead of the eldest. Because that happened to somebody else in the story, didn't it? Remember the story where somebody got blessed, the younger got blessed? We'll get into it next week. But that's what Joseph or Jacob does at the point where he's blessing Joseph and his sons at the time of his own death. So the wonderful story of how Joseph had interpreted the dreams, had set a plan for to save all their lives, and then he saved the lives of his own family through this famine, brought them out of Canaan into Egypt, and they grew exceedingly and multiplied exceedingly, and also very became very wealthy in the 17 years after they got there. And the 17 years is over, and Jacob is facing the end of his life. The last thing he wants to do in chapter 48 is to bless his children, which was typical this day. So next week, we'll get into chapter 48, we'll talk about that. And then I anticipate we'll finish Genesis next week. And then we're going to start with the apostles, starting with Matthew. And I've already got some outlines made up. And so we're going to continue with the apostles. And after we get done with the apostles, we may do a Paul, which could take 2 or 3 years. Because Paul is obviously, I'm just kidding, we won't do that. But we'll go from the apostles to Revelation. And at some point, though, I'm going to do a deep dive on Paul. Because that's a wonderful study, a story we do. We'll do the apostles. And then I'm not sure how long that'll last, because there's not a lot of information about a lot of the apostles. Historically or even biblically. But we'll go through what we can find, and then we'll talk about Revelation. Pray for me about Revelation. Revelation is deep. I don't intend to get into the deepest parts because it's beyond me, and I think it's a point of diminishing returns when you start to talk about all the types and how everything means. We're going to get into the most important parts to us today. We'll cover that in Revelation, and then we'll go from there. So pray for me as we go through that. Let's have a word of prayer. Father, thank you again for the